Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Gilcrease Museum of Art has opened a new exhibit devoted to the work of the late Tulsa artist Shan Gosshorn. Weaving History into Art features the artist's work that combines traditional Cherokee basket weaving techniques with powerful messages of advocacy for Native peoples and against the systemic racism they have faced for generations. The beauty of the baskets draw viewers in, but upon close examination, one sees the weaving strips contain historical documents, imagery, and messages which recounts America's troubled and sordid history with the continent's first peoples. Shan Gosshorn was a multifaceted artist who worked in numerous disciplines and media, always with a strong and direct message on racism and oppression directed at American Indians. The exhibit, which will be featured in two phases, one now through January 3rd, and the second mid-January through March of 2021, will feature in total over 60 of Gosshorn's baskets, along with works by four of the artist's contemporaries and friends, Carol and Martha Douglas, Anita Fields, Lisa Rutherford, and Holly Wilson. Weaving History into Art, the enduring legacy of Shan Gosshorn, is on display now at Gilcrease Museum. My guest is the exhibit's curator and the curator of history at Gilcrease, Mark Dolph. Mark Dolph, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Rich, for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, this exhibit at Gilcrease, I'm so happy to see it. Shan was one of our great treasures in Oklahoma. Not native to Oklahoma, but she's lived here for many years, and her work is so important. I'm pleased that you're doing it. She was such a passionate artist and advocate for Native peoples. Tell me a bit about how this show came about.
Well, the genesis really was December 30th, 2018. Gilcrease Museum hosted a memorial service for Shan. She had passed away December 1st, 2018, and her family asked if we could do a service here at the museum. Gilcrease Museum was integral in several of Shan's works, where she would come out and do research in the archives, in the art collection, and you would see that research in her basket. So Gilcrease was an important part of her work. And during the service, which was extremely well attended, I was standing, watching, listening, and a colleague said, you know, we really ought to do an exhibition of Shan's work. And I said, oh, I completely agree, but you are aware we only, as a museum, we only have one of Shan's baskets. And to do a show that really Shan deserves, her legacy deserves, would require lots of loans. But within a few days, I put together a proposal, presented it to our executive director, Susan Neal, and she said, let's go with it. We ended up with 20 different lenders that have so graciously allowed us to present their works in the exhibition, and that makes it possible. That's just Shan's work. We have four other artists that we can talk about, and they have lenders that have contributed works as well. So the genesis goes back to that memorial service.
Yeah. When I think of the legacy of her work, you know, I had the pleasure of talking with her several times during her career. Her photography work was just as powerful, perhaps even more powerful and confrontational. And I think audiences probably weren't ready to hear her messages at that particular time, which is in the 1990s, early 2000s. In many ways, her art was ahead of her time. I think if you saw those images today, people would be accepting and understanding them and understanding it, because we've had such a sea change in attitudes in our country when it concerns rights of people of color. And but the basketry was a different thing. And I think she early on recognized that people were more receptive to her message with basketry. Why was that?
Well, I think Shan found, and I'll quote her, that the baskets allowed people or encouraged people to lean in. The beauty of the object, the sheer interest of seeing something very new that they'd never seen before, encouraged them to approach it, and that beauty was this kind of portal into the message that Shan wanted to convey. I don't know that there's any way to separate Shan's advocacy from her art. that had always been just hand in hand. You mentioned the earlier works were confrontational. I had a conversation with Shan once, and I used the analogy, the finger wag, that sometimes someone viewing those works, particularly a non-native person, might feel that they were being scolded. And they probably were. Shan would probably agree with that. But the basket allowed the same message to be received in a much more non-confrontational way. And that was something that in the exhibition I really wanted to take advantage of, that the beauty of these objects allows, particularly, again, the non-native audience to lean in. They are intrigued by the basket, but every work of Shan's that we have in the exhibition, and there over the course of the 6 months, we will have 61 of her baskets. Every one of them has her artist statement accompanying it. So I think it's almost a history lesson at the knee of Shan Gosshorn for American history in general, but particularly Native American history. And by the time a visitor has an opportunity to spend time in the exhibition, to read these artist statements of Shan's, hopefully leave the museum with an exhibition catalog so that they can take this with them, they will have a much better appreciation for what she was all about.
Yeah. And what's interesting is she came to basketry. Was it by accident? I mean, she was just experimenting. This is how she discovered this technique? She's an Eastern Band Cherokee, but she didn't have weavers in her background, among her family members.
That's correct. And that's a really interesting story. I'm glad you brought it up. You mentioned she was not born in Oklahoma. She was born in Cherokee, North Carolina, the homelands of the Cherokee people before forced removal in the 1830s. And those Cherokee that were able to escape a removal remained there in the mountains of western North Carolina. That's where she grew up. She spent a lot of her early years in Baltimore, but would always come back to Cherokee to visit a family, to hear the stories of the elders. So she remained kind of immersed in Cherokee culture as a young person, as a teenager. And in her late teens, early 20s, she did some projects there for the cultural institute there in Cherokee. And one of those projects was to document traditional Cherokee basket designs. And as an artist, Shan did 20 of these wonderful drawings that capture, document these traditional Cherokee weaving patterns. And we have several of them in the exhibition. So that was in the late 1970s. And you're right, the baskets are really the last piece of her artistic oeuvre, her legacy. But she goes back to something she had done as a young person for the inspiration for the traditional patterns, and then she applies her own very contemporary weave on the baskets through her advocacy.
She was self-taught, and yet she mastered some pretty complex techniques.
Yes, the only basket of hers that the museum currently owns is Sealed Fate, Treaty of New Echota Protest Basket. It's her first double weave basket, and that's a very complicated weave. It's a traditional pattern, but very few people have mastered it. In fact, by the time she finished Sealed Fate in 2010, the Cherokee, Eastern Band of Cherokee, identified Shan as only the 14th living Cherokee who had mastered this technique. And that, I think, highlights another one of her missions, if I can use that word, is the continuity of culture. That whether it was the boarding school that tried to eradicate Native culture across all Native nations, or the genocide that was inflicted upon Native people, there was a tremendous loss of culture. And she was extremely concerned about not letting these cultures die away, whether at the hands of the federal government through acts like the boarding schools, or just the assimilation forced or otherwise, into mainstream culture that was losing, whether it was the skill of the basket maker or, I think, even more importantly, the loss of languages. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the themes you see in her works in the exhibition, is trying to retain, to continue these different cultural characteristics of the Cherokee people.
Again, for those not familiar with her work, again, she's weaving baskets. In the case of Sealed Fate, the body of this lidded basket is woven with strands that contain the Treaty of New Echota, which is the treaty which led to the removal of or a treaty that sort of, what did it signify, Cherokee's acceptance of removal?
Well, one faction of the Cherokees'
right.
Agreement to removal. The Ridge faction signed the treaty. The Ross faction was opposed to it. And the basket is based around the protest letter that the Ross faction sent to the federal government saying that this treaty has been signed by a minority of the Cherokee people. The majority are opposed to it, so it gets its name as a protest basket. And again, this shows Shan's scholarly research. In my mind, she is every bit the scholar as she is the artist and advocate. But she came into the Gilcrease Museum, researched our collections. We have the protest letter in the collection. And back to her photography, she would take these very high-resolution photographs of documents like this. Obviously, we can't let her take apart our original 1830s document and weave it into the basket. So she would take photographs and then cut the photographs into strips that she would then weave into these baskets.
Yeah, and on the lid it contains Andrew Jackson's signature, again, the architect of removal.
Yes, and so many of her baskets do reference Andrew Jackson in one form or the other. In fact, that pattern on the top, on the lid of Sealed Fate, is a traditional Cherokee pattern called Man in a Coffin. So I think there's some association there with Jackson.
My guest today is Mark Dolph, the curator of history at Gilcrease Museum and curator for Gilcrease Presents Weaving History into Art, the Enduring Legacy of Shan Gosshorn, an amazing artist and featuring her basketry that combined these very important historical representations of historical documents in Native history woven into these beautiful forms, and some of them are amazingly beautiful. I'm thinking of one that really caught my eye, which is one of her last pieces called Squaw, and it's the torso upper body of a female positioned as if she were Venus de Milo. But woven into the baskets are the names and tribes of 306 women from First Nations who had been murdered. And it's an incredibly powerful piece.
It really is. And while there are so many just wonderful works in the exhibition, in my mind, Squaw is the premier. It's the premier in the fact that this is the first public exhibition of this work, Squaw. It was Shan's final work before her passing. That last year of her life, I was over at her studio in the spring, and she was still working on this, and she shared the title with me, and it literally sent chills down my spine, because I understand that Squaw is a pejorative. It's one of these words that I don't use, and then
right.
to hear Shan use it and tell me that it was the title of this work, it took me aback, and it certainly required some explanation on her part. But once she told me what she was intending this to convey, it made all the sense in the world. And you mentioned earlier, Rich, that Shan's photography was ahead of its time. I think her works have proven to be ahead of their time, Squaw included, that now there's much more awareness of the missing, murdered Indigenous women's movement, the extraordinarily high rate of violence inflicted on Native women, and how so often that violence that's perpetrated on Native women goes unpunished. Well, think about the McGirt ruling recently.
Right.
And how that will impact the ability of tribes to prosecute crimes on their own territory, their reservations and so forth. So this was just one example of the kind of advocacy that Shan was involved with for years that is now seeing results. I can think of a couple others. She was at the Dakota Pipeline, right. Access Dakota Pipeline protest several years ago. This year, a ruling has stopped that act of, in my mind, violating Native sovereignty, the Oglala Sioux sovereignty on their lands, or the decision of the Washington football team to change their name. These were all issues that Shan was deeply involved in and committed to seeing change happen, and it is.
Shan was addressing the name of the Washington football team 25 to 30 years ago, too.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Along with many other
yes.
Misuse or inappropriate appropriation of Native names and imagery. That's another one of the themes that you see repeated throughout these works in the exhibition.
There's another piece that follows along very closely on that theme. It's called Song of Sorrow. It's a beautiful piece, beautiful basket, but it uses the texts of, this is something I heard as a kid, and I think anyone who grew up in Oklahoma heard this song, the sanitized lyrics of the song, Ten Little Indians. And she takes a number of those versions. Some of the versions are, you know, they're all offensive to one, you know, degree or another, but some are really, truly, almost obscenely offensive, interwoven with prayers of healing in Navajo, Lakota, and Kaw. It is a, you know, it's when, you know, it's hard to see the message, but when you know the message in the statement, it is a very powerful piece.
Oh, you are so right, Rich. That basket at first viewing is just absolutely gorgeous. So again, it does exactly what so many of her baskets do. It draws you in with its beauty, its creativity. And then, for those that want to know more, you begin to read Shan's artist statement about this, and you learn about how the boarding school experience changed Native culture in ways that were very detrimental that are still being felt today, this idea of historical trauma living out in contemporary times, or how that song, Ten Little Indians, and like you, I'd probably remember as a child learning how to count based on that song, and never really, again, as a child, thinking about the damage that something like that can do to both the subject, Indian children, or those of us, like me as a non-Native person, begins to see Native people through a song like that as less than fully human. And I think that was so important to Shan to hold that mirror up to us and let us see what negative effects these kinds of images or songs have had over time. But as you indicate, she also has woven into the basket these prayers of healing and well-being. Shan was a very generous person, and I think there's a lot of forgiveness if we will allow Shan to lead us toward that forgiveness and reconciliation.
I know she suffered my ignorance, so I agree with you as well. My guest today is Mark Dolph, a curator of history at Gilcrease Museum. Gilcrease is presenting an exhibit, The Enduring Legacy of Shan Goshorn, titled Weaving History into Art. It features her work along with four of her contemporaries at the Gilcrease Museum. You mentioned the boarding school, and a number of the pieces directly confront the boarding school experience, forever woven into our fabric, a red basket woven with the Carlisle Indian School, I guess they would call it motto. Shan referred to it as a manifesto, kill the Indian, save the man, white ideals, which has a list of the name of the children who attended Carlisle. A number of pieces reference that experience.
Yes, I would say, I probably should do a count, but probably half of the baskets in one way or the other reference the boarding school experience. And as you mentioned, that begins with the Carlisle schools there in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, at a military barracks headed up by an Army officer, Captain Richard Henry Pratt, who had been responsible for guarding Indian prisoner of war captives down in Fort Marion, Florida. And like so many things, the boarding school experience is complicated. I personally think there were people that literally thought the only way that Native people could survive is to be assimilated into white culture, because they're operating with the idea that the Native American is a vanishing race, that they are disappearing, and their only hope is to become more like us, white Americans. And the boarding school was Pratt's idea way to do this. And the best way to do it was to break that link with culture, and children are that link. So if you can break the language, break the culture, the customs, and so forth, you do it with children, and it does not get transmitted to the next generation.
It's an issue we're still dealing with, the separations of families to this day along our southern border.
Well, that's a great point, Rich. I mentioned in my essay in the catalog that I had an essay ready to go back in February, but with the onset of the pandemic and then George Floyd's killing in May 25th, I had to rewrite that, because I think the environment changed in a way that made Shan's works even more important. And the core of so many of her baskets dealt with racism. Now, she was primarily dealing with racism directed at Native people, but racism is racism, and thinking of some people as less than others. And the pandemic has highlighted all of the inequities, whether intentional or structural, in our society. And then the killing of Floyd highlighted them even more. Well, again, back to your comment earlier, Shan was ahead of her time in addressing these issues. Not that I had anything to do with it, Rich, but the time is really right, I think, for us to reflect on Shan's work in a way that a year ago would not have been as possible.
Let me ask you about one more work in Shan's portion of the show, and that is probably a work that's somewhat special to you. It's called Breaking the Binds.
Yes, I mentioned that we have several private collectors that have loaned works to the exhibition. That's a work that my wife and I purchased from Shan. I loved, again, you're brought to the object with its beauty. And in this case, the shape of this basket is very different from the others. After you look at it and learn a little bit more about it, it's a corset, a woman's corset. And it deals, again, with the boarding school experience. And I think Shan's asking a question: did this experience corset, wrap up, tie up young Indian women, or are they breaking free from the confines of that boarding school experience? And I go with the latter, that this show is all about women. I don't know that I realized that at first when I first began conceptualizing it. Obviously, Shan's a woman. I wanted her to be the feature. But as I began first developing a list of objects that I wanted to contact collectors or institutions about lending to the exhibition, it became more and more apparent that as I got into the baskets, the issue of women for Shan was extremely important. And the fact that 2020 is the centenary of women's suffrage was important. And then as I got further into the exhibition planning, I knew that I wanted to have women represented that were associated with Shan in some way. And so I put together a list I think it had about 20 names on it by the time I got done, of artists that had some association with Shan. And the top four on that list were women. Three of them I would describe having a mentor-mentee. They were the mentee. Shan was the mentor in the relationship. The other was probably more of a relationship of equals. Those four women I contacted, I would like you to be part of the exhibition. Every one of them said, absolutely, I wouldn't miss this opportunity for the world. Those four women are Carol Amurthal Douglas, Anita Fields, Lisa Rutherford, and Holly Wilson. All of them are Native women artists, and their works, I think, both complement Shan's baskets and Shan's artistic vision, but with their own personalities and strengths as artists, reflecting Shan's artistic vision as well. So besides Shan's works, and by the time the exhibition runs its course on March 28th, we will have 61 of Shan's baskets, but we will also have, 20 works by these four women in the exhibition.
Now, you said through the course of the exhibition, will the exhibition evolve during the course of its stay here at the Gilcrease?
Yes, it opened to the public yesterday, and that's what I call the first rotation of works. That first rotation runs from yesterday, October 8th, through January 3rd. Then we will close down for about 10 days, and we will rotate, swap out objects for the second rotation, which opens January 15th and runs through March 28th. And that second rotation will bring in an additional 25 baskets of Shan's and some new works by the other four women artists.
And so this is really two exhibitions in two phases in a way.
Yes, you could say the first phase and second phase. I would encourage, despite the pandemic and here at the museum, we're doing everything possible to make a visitor's experience as safe as we can. But if you come and see the exhibition, say, this week or next week or sometime before January 3rd, you're going to see one variation of the exhibition. So you really need to come back at least one more time in the second rotation to see these new objects. And by seeing both, you have the opportunity to get the full impact, I think, of Shan's vision and creativity.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing the show in person. I've seen the catalog. It's some amazing work, and it's a great homage to this important artist who was in our community for so long. The name of the exhibit, Weaving History into Art, The Enduring Legacy of Shan Gosshorn, is on display now through March of next year, but the first phase through January 3rd. Mark, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich.
Mark Dolph is the curator of history at Gilcrease Museum of Art. Weaving History into Art, The Enduring Legacy of Shan Gosshorn is now on display through March of 2021. For more information on the exhibit, which is currently open, visit gilcrease.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.